Okay, so this is Bio 231, and this is the hybrid class, and it's Monday, August 17th. Our first session, we're going to cover introduction. We're still just going over some administrative details, like the syllabus and things like that. So the voice recordings you can find at this website. And notice if you download this to your computer, these links become activated as long as you hover over them and then hit Control. Right, then it becomes an executable link to that website from this Word document. So that's kind of handy to do that. You probably guys know more about computers than I do, but I just thought I'd mention that. Here are some requirements of the computer that you might need to accomplish the online content. Here is a link to Blackboard. Here's to your gateway. All right, so you don't necessarily have to have all that in your favorites. When you send me an email, okay, make sure in the subject line you put your last name and put the course number and put the CRN number. Because as you see, I'm teaching a lot of classes, and if I just get your name and even anatomy, I won't have a clue where to find you. Right? It's going to take me a half hour to find you in the records. And as a matter of fact, my spam filter might not even let you through. So make sure you put your name and your CRN number in the course number, and then it'll be easy to help you out. Attendance. Just means that you have to be in class, right, for the entire class period and participating. Otherwise, I'll have to drop you so you can read through all that. Grading. Okay, I need to make a little modification to grading. But the lab is worth 25% of your grade, and the lecture is worth 75%. All quizzes are going to be worth 100 points. Lab quizzes, as well as some online quizzes that I'm going to have you take. All right, so any kind of quiz, we add all of those up, all right, and find out what your average is. Let's just say that there's 20 quizzes through the whole semester, and if you get 80% on those 20 quizzes, guess how many points you get? You get 80 points, right? So the percentage that you get cumulatively on all the quizzes will be equal to the number of points you get for that particular part of the class. All right, so hopefully it might be a lot closer to 100% than 80%. Right, the quizzes, the way I design quizzes, are to just guide you step by step through the class. Right, so none of them should be too terribly bad, but you do have to apply yourself to a little bit to gain that information. So makeup quizzes, looks really bad. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. But I'll probably allow you to drop maybe one or two, depending on how the class is doing, something like that, so you don't have to be in class every absolute day or fear getting a zero, because you don't want many zeros. They're hard to average out. Lab practicums, there's going to be 5 lab practicums in lab. They're worth 50 points each, and I'll tell you more about that when we have lab, yeah.
Some
might be oral. Well, sometimes, for instance, it could have maybe a bone, but for instance, I really want you to know how to use a microscope, so I just won't ask you about the pieces of a microscope. I might ask you to demonstrate how you use one. And so one oral type quiz I've given in the past is that I have a handful of microscope slides, and I have you pick one, and they're all different, and you pick one, and then you demonstrate to me that you can use a microscope to find out what's on the slide, and then it's kind of like save the world kind of exercise. You have to tell me what's on the microscope slide because, you know, it's going to kill the world unless we know what it is. And so you have to tell me, oh, that's bone, okay, or oh, that's muscle, okay, that kind of thing. So it's just a one-on-one kind of test. So we'll see if we have time for doing that. Okay? So that's an oral. Other times, I might ask you orally about anatomy. You know, show me this structure, show me that structure. But in lab for anatomy, we always have a list of things that you have to know. So you can just go right down the list and check them off. So you should know 100% ahead of time if you've gained that knowledge or not. Okay. So again, they're kind of easy, but it, you know, produces a little anxiety, I suppose. Okay. All right, so that's lab practicums, and then there's going to be 5 objective exams. So if you add up 100 points and 250 points, that's 350 points. 350 points is 25% of your grade. So 3 times that is, what, 1,050 points? That's what you're going to get for lecture exams, because the lecture part is worth 3/4 of your grade. So if we divide that by 5, that turns into 210 points for every lecture exam. So if you get 100% on a lecture exam, you get a full 210 points. Okay? And if you get a 50% on a lecture exam, that probably won't happen in here, then what? You get 105 points for that particular exam, right? So just multiply those two numbers together. And the lab quizzes and lab practicums, I'll provide the paper for taking those things. So it will be maybe drawing or labeling diagrams, so that will be on a piece of paper. However, the objective exams, you'll need a Scantron 882E. Oh, it says ES right here. I guess I like the ES. I'll show you exactly which one that is as the time comes. And most importantly, you need an excellent eraser. That's the most important thing, because stray marks and a Scantron will lead you to get a false miss score, and then you're going to just be missing those points. I want people to look over their exams in this class during lab, but there's going to be a lot of exams, and you've taken a lot of exams, and you've never gotten the Scantron back, and if you mismarked it, you never got any feedback. Right? You're going to be taking board exams and all kinds of things, and I would hate to have anybody miss certification because they had a Scantron that was smudged up or something, and probably everybody in here does that. Right, so first couple times I might not give any credit for a smudged up Scantron, just so that you get over it. Make sure you get a good eraser. So I'll show you what a good eraser looks like too. Okay. So it's just a strict 90-80-70 scale for ABCDE based on the points. 1400 is the maximum. Academic honesty, go a long way in here to prevent any kind of cheating, so make sure every exam, every quiz is just individual effort. The online quizzes, you can use your notes and your textbook, but anything in class, whether it's lab or lecture, closed notes. All right, so if you know where the answer is in your notes or book and it's just not coming to mind, don't reach down and get your book open and take a look at it, please. Okay, you're just going to have to just leave it sit right there. And turn off all your electronic devices during the test. No cell phones, PDAs, or anything. So it has to be turned off. Silent mode or vibration mode or airplane mode. If it's in any kind of mode, okay, we consider that cheating. All right, so make sure that it's turned off completely, right, any kind of electronic device. I think you can look at all this stuff right here. All right, you're welcome to look through all of this. Other important information. Oh, emergency procedures. On a Wednesday, we're going to have a drill. I don't know if it's going to occur during our time. That's September 16th. And if there is an emergency, what should we do? Take your personal belongings, because who knows if you can get back in the building, and proceed through a safe exit. Okay, so that makes perfect sense. Don't exit through an unsafe exit that's falling down or in flames burning, right? Okay. So this is some good FEMA advice. And then just move away from the building, and during the drill, people will tell you, official marshals will tell us where they want us to go. No hats, hoods, sunglasses during tests. All right. Don't look at the instructor during tests. Just focus on your own paper. And I do need a Cypress College or Fullerton College ID. When you turn your test in, all right, I need an ID. So I teach a number of online classes, and for online classes, that's really important. And so now I just require picture IDs from everybody, even my on-campus classes, because it's really unfair to treat one group of students one way and another group a different way, right? So everybody just has to produce a Cypress College picture ID. And here, since I record my lectures and I put it online, I give you the opportunity to say you don't want me to do that, maybe for confidentiality reasons, right? That might inhibit you from asking questions during class, because then your voice might end up on the internet and somebody can tell you're in this class or whatever. I'm not really sure. So if you tell me in writing this week, then I won't do it. Okay, and it can be, you know, between you and me. The whole class doesn't have to know about that. But my microphone is calibrated to my voice right here, so if you speak up out there, it really doesn't get picked up by the recorder. But if somebody's really concerned about that, you'll have to let me know. Okay. Withdrawal policy, well, you just got to make sure that you withdraw yourself. Some people would like recommendations later. Please read this about recommendations. It will take me a couple weeks to write a recommendation for you. And then here is the tentative lecture schedule. So today is orientation and chapter one a little bit, maybe proceed on to cells. Okay. Then we're going to have lab one on Wednesday, and then next week we're going to move to cells. The third week we're going to talk about integument. Then that same week you're going to have your first lab practicum over cells and tissues. And then we're going to get to our first exam on September 9th. Okay, so this kind of just outlines the schedule right here. All the way down through the rest of the semester. So these exams, of course, are going to be in this room on campus. Right. The only test that will be online will be some quizzes. And I think I'm going to have the quizzes due on Tuesday night by 11 p.m. So not tomorrow, because that's too soon. So a week from Tuesday will be your first online quiz that's going to cover a couple of these first chapters, probably chapters 1 and 2. Right? And there'll be other information there, interactive exercises, videos to watch, and things like that to help you prepare for those quizzes. Okay. Here's a lab schedule that you can go over. Okay. All right, so let's see. We've got the study plan. We've got the syllabus. And the other thing that we have online are the lecture notes that I use. Okay, and I had a bunch printed out for this class, but I see a lot of them disappeared. So you don't necessarily have to copy down everything I say, because you can download these from the internet. Where are these located? Okay, Blackboard, course documents, lecture slides. Okay, so here are all just the lecture notes, which is just a Word file. Okay, that I show in class, and I go over some of the information. Some of the information we'll go over in lab. So I don't know if anybody printed these out. I don't know if you moused around, but if you're interested in that, I just have a handful. Okay, so you might want to download the cells lecture notes and tissue lecture notes right here. The other thing that I have on here are assignments. And what helps you in lecture is if you're a little bit familiar with the material before you hear a lecture on it, because the terminology will be new. If I use new terminology that you're not familiar with, well, I can talk to you all day long, but if you're not familiar with it, it's just going to go right over your head. So the pre-lecture reading assignment and questions help you get oriented so that lecture makes a lot more sense to you. Okay, so chapters 1 and 2, these are the ones that you should be working on. And then, at the proper times, the answer keys will become available to you. All right, so early next week, the answer keys will be available. Let's see if we go into like instructor mode. Available August 19th. Okay, and this one will be 19th as well. The third one, come on, cursor. All right, the 26th. So these will just pop up automatically for you. If you need them sooner, just make sure you talk to me and I can get them to you. But they're in plenty of time for the lecture exams. Okay. The other thing, course documents. Lecture exam study guides. All right, so here is a listing. Actually, it's a partial listing of things that I want you to do per chapter. These are relative to your textbook. All right, so let's pass these around. Yeah, pass those around. I'll keep one. Take one and pass it around. So these are where the lecture exams are going to come from. So let's see. If we wanted to download one, let's do exam one with figures. All right, so right-click, save target as, blah, 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 save it. right here in Bio-231. It's a pretty big file, but it's about almost, it's 4.5 megabytes because there's some graphics in here. We'll open it up. Here's what it looks like. So here's chapter one, our objectives. These are in your book. Exam figures. All right, I want you to know code figures 1.3, 1.4, 5, all the way up through 1.12A. Right, not inclusive of all the figures in between. And if you look at this, the hard copy, okay, these are figures that I might photocopy and put it on the test and ask you to label that on the lecture exam in here. All right, and these you can practice until you can get 100% on that part of the test. And it's about 40% of the lecture test is this graphical component. Now, some people do really well with graphical material like this. Other people just, you know, it's harder for them. So everybody learns a little bit different, their style. If you pick this up, this information very quickly, maybe you only have to label these diagrams once or twice. But if you don't have graphical kind of memory, then maybe you have to practice labeling 10 times. I'm not sure. It all depends on the person. All right, but guaranteed you're going to have 40% of the test on these figures for test number one of these five chapters. Chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5, right? So these are all the exam figures, and I gave you a copy. This is on so that you can download them again, or at least the figures that you think you need to brush up on a little bit more than the others. Okay.
Are you
going
to print these out every time?
No, this is the only time, just to give you a flavor for doing it, okay? And there might be a lot of people that just do this in their notebooks or on their desktops at home, okay? So I won't bring in any more study plans or lecture notes or the study guide right here. Now, if you don't want to print out the whole study guide, I also have it as what a study guide without the figures, which is basically just the first page. And that's only a couple kilobytes to download, but it's really handy to practice. And online, you'll have interactive exercises for some of these figures. So you can like drag and drop or do some kind of activity with them. Okay. Okay, so this is kind of handy. There's another resource that I'll put online. Oh, review questions. These are at the end of the chapter. All right, so these are the questions that I like at the end of MERIB. And make sure you can answer those, because sometimes I take those out of the textbook and put them on the test as well. So that practices the information and makes you use the information, but you might see it again. The answers are in the appendix of the book, so you can check your answers, no problem. There is another online book, McKinley. It does not require a password, and I'll tell you what questions to review in the McKinley textbook. And again, some of those questions might end up on your internet quiz, right? But they're all really kind of similar. It's just more questions, meaning, you know, you can probably get 100% if you have a lot of time to study for this class. Yeah. I'll look that over. I'm not so sure. There are some pretty good exercises on there, but I won't use that for developing any grades. Okay, so there are some useful things. That's also online, but you need a password to get into that. So I haven't made up my mind if I want people to buy like a brand new book that has an unused password in it. Right now I'm kind of leaning toward, if you find any kind of MERIB, the fifth edition, even an international edition, that's probably okay with me. All right. It has to be the fifth edition. Okay. So that's a really good question. That's what I was going to mention next. But I couldn't order the book without all that material in the bookstore. It came prepackaged that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came prepackaged. So the other reference, a little pamphlet of bones, is really good. I just don't know how useful that CD is going to be, but I couldn't get the book without it. Okay. All right, so when it comes time to take an exam in here, you got to know review questions 1 through 12 for chapter 4, and this is for the 5th edition. The questions at the end of the chapter for the 4th edition may be the same, or some of them might be different, and they change the wording. All right, so if you use the 4th edition, you might not be prepared as well as somebody that's using the 5th edition. The exam figure numbers change from one edition to the other. So you might be studying the wrong exam figure if you use a different edition. But so you just have to check to see what the difference is. And in the reserve section of the library, I put two or three copies of the current edition there. So you can go check out the current edition and just compare figure numbers. If the figure is the same but a different number, then it's easy. All right, but sometimes they drop a figure or they add a figure, and then you'll just have to photocopy it. But the good thing is I have it in the study guide for you. Okay, but at the end of chapter questions, you'll just have to go question by question by question to make sure it's the same so that you review that material. Okay, so that was a question on what edition do I have to buy. Anatomy hasn't changed from the fourth edition to the fifth edition, but the figure numbers have changed and the end of chapter questions have changed. And that's really what tunes you up to taking a test. Okay? So as long as you're diligent in seeing what the difference is, you're okay. Yeah?
Will you ever have a review question or exam figure that's not on the study guide?
It's happened in the past. I don't want it to happen. Usually I'm making an extra credit or something. Okay? So it's really a faux pas if that happens, and I try and make it up for students. But if you know this information, you should be able to get 100% on the test. Okay. Now, the multiple choice questions, most of them maybe come from the text. From the end of chapter questions. Some might come from lecture, so it's important for you to review lecture notes. And it's important for you to lecture notes and listen to lecture. So I might mention something in lecture or emphasize something in lecture that's not an end of chapter question. Okay, so I don't know how much a percentage on the test is here, majority of it. Okay, but if you review lecture notes, do the interactive exercises online, have time to let it sink in, then I think you should do pretty good in here. Though it is a lot of information for sure, but you'll get the hang of it. Okay. All right. So I think that's it. Most of the things that I passed out, that's what I need to say, and no ad codes for anybody. So I think we're going to get started talking about today's material, which is introduction. So what do I want to do? Maybe I'll leave this open. I need to go to Blackboard. I need to go to course documents. I need to go to lecture slides, and I need to download the first lecture. Yeah.
This is like the first online class I've ever taken.
Okay.
So we meet on Mondays and Wednesdays, right? So
yeah.
Are we pretty much on our own for everything else? Do you advise us to log in every day at that certain time, or I've never taken
that. Oh yeah. So this is it's independent study for part of the class. The way a hybrid class works is that it replaces one on-campus meeting. So it's less than 50% of the class. So that's why we don't have lecture on Wednesday, but we have labs on campus and the first lecture on campus. So the rest of the time, the other hour and a half, you should be working with materials that are in Blackboard or other places that I direct you to go with links on Blackboard, like interactive exercises, watching videos. Maybe you saw some videos that I had in Blackboard right here that you can watch, but I will alert you to them.
So even though we don't attend class on Wednesday, you want us to look at the lecture notes for that Wednesday, correct?
Yeah. Sorry about this cursor.
And then you'll tell us what to look or what to link into?
Yeah.
For
the
whole thing?
Yeah. Course documents. So I'll tell you, well, watch this video right here, okay, on the kidney, for instance. And some videos will have a little five-question practice quiz afterwards, which is going to be graded for you, so you know if you get it right or wrong, but it won't generate any points for you in the class, but it will just give you feedback, so we call that a self-assessment before you actually take a test. The other thoughts I had, so the other time you'll just be spent online.
It could be any day.
It could be any, I know what it's going to say. So it's 24 hours a day, any day. So independent study on your own, 24 hours a day, any day of the week, but it is a paced class, right? So that by Tuesday, if I say you got to take this quiz by Tuesday night at 11, you got to accomplish that, those interactive exercises or read the textbook or answer these questions, and then you're ready to take the quiz. So it's not independent study from beginning to end. You know, it's independent study a week chunk at a time. Okay, that's how that goes. Okay, so the lecture exams have the schedule. The online quizzes should be done anytime before Tuesday at 11 p.m. And then lab quizzes, I'll have you take lab quizzes every time, unless we have a practicum that day. Then there's no lab quiz. And the point of the quizzes is just to get you tuned up for the big lecture exams. Right, because that's where most of your grade comes from, is the lecture exams. Okay? Okay, yeah.
Does Blackboard record how many hours you've been online?
Yeah, I can record everything. I've enabled all the statistics. I've never used it for anything before, because I'm sure that I was working in Blackboard, I would log on, and then I would go have supper or something, and then come back, and it looked like I spent, you know, 2 weeks straight on Blackboard. So, you know, it's sort of interesting to find out what exercises students find is useful, but it's not really meaningful statistics in terms of generating a performance grade on somebody, okay? And it could be maybe somebody's just really fast and they hardly spend any time on Blackboard, and maybe I should give people a grade by how little time they spend on Blackboard, okay? So there's no way to tell, you know, how to use that to generate a grade, yeah. Yeah.
They, like, say if you messed up on one, can we take it again?
Mm.
You said it's like practice, right?
Or some of the quizzes are practice, okay? But if it's an official quiz due by 11 p.m., then you take it one time, right? But there's going to be other quizzes that you can take multiple choice questions that will be almost identical to what's on the one that you actually take for the grade. And that one you can take 100 times if you want, okay? So there's plenty of practice online. And the ones at the end of the chapter, you can, of course, review those as many times as you want to. And I would take those real seriously. Don't just read them over. Practice them like it was a real test, the questions that are at the end of the chapter. Okay, so write them down on a piece of paper or something, photocopy them, and then check it and see how you did. Then take a break, go back and do it again. Yeah. The quiz is due by 11 on Tuesday, 11 p.m. Right, right. And that will benefit you with lecture exams in here and even the quizzes in lab. Well, no, the practicums, mostly the lecture exams. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're very welcome to go to SI for my earlier class on Mondays and Wednesdays. And I should put that information on Blackboard for you.
Okay.
I'll send it out as an email, and then it will be incorporated as an announcement on the very first page. And I have two SI instructors, so we have a lot of SI instructors for anatomy, at least for my section. That's Natalie Schmaltz and Christina Speck. And I'll find out what their schedule is. They're just getting started. And so supplemental instruction is very handy because you get to interact with other students and other people that have gone through the class and have mastered the material, and you can just talk to them and interact, and that's actually how you learn, by using the material. And it is free to you to go. It doesn't cost anything to go to SI, but SI is very expensive to run. Okay, and so can you imagine what's happening to expensive programs that are not absolutely essential? They're being cut. So I don't know if we're going to have SI for very much longer here, so I'll try to get that information to you really soon so you can take advantage of it, because it could be a real lifesaver, right? This is the statistics that have been accumulated with supplemental instruction is that it usually increases somebody's grade. It's never been a case where it decreases anybody's grade, which is good. And it increases somebody's grade by a letter and a half. So that means if you're getting a high C and you're diligent with SI, what does that do? that takes you to a high B, and then another step above that, you could be getting an A in the class. So that's really a huge benefit to people, so I'm glad you mentioned that. So I don't mind if you ask me again if I forget to get their schedule. Oh, I'd like it if you were to bring a laptop. Okay. To class, as long as you're not really noisy if you're taking notes. Okay, if some people when they type, it's really, really noisy. And if that disturbs people, then we'll have to figure something to do. Yeah, but laptops are fine in lab and also in lecture, as long as you're doing anatomy. Okay, don't be surfing around or doing like math homework or something, or chemistry homework, okay, or other things. So, yeah, that's fine with me. The only thing that's really forbidden is just never take a picture or video of anybody in here, okay? And all this other information that I gave you, all the pictures that you can practice labeling on, I give them to you in an electronic format online, and don't ever take them and put them on another website because I don't have permission to do that. They're copyrighted by the authors of your textbook and that publishing company, so they're there for your use in this class. You know, you can reproduce them as many times as you want, but don't ever put them on another website or sell them to anybody, okay, because we don't have permission to do that. Okay. Okay, any other questions so far? Well, I think you'll get the hang of how this works in a little bit. What else is important? Course information. I have some links for some plugins that are helpful. You might not have a Microsoft Word viewer. You can go get one for free. You don't have to buy a Microsoft Word program at this link right here, PowerPoint viewer. I might have some PowerPoints for you to look at. Windows Media Player is very good for listening to the audio tapes again. And then for the videos that I make in lab, this is a really good video player plugin, DVX. All right, I don't record anything in HD, but this will even play HD back for you. So these are some good plugins for if your computer doesn't have. Now, who doesn't have a computer in here? Anybody not have a computer? That's good. Okay. Because sometimes I make an assumption in class and it leads students down the wrong track. I could give you an example. I had a student and they were doing really poorly for some reason and they were really in tune to what's happening in class, and so we sat down and talked and I said, well, you know, how's your study time? And they say, oh, I study all the time. I study. And I go, well, what about the exam figures? Oh, yeah, I study the exam figures. I study. And I go, oh, gee, you know, I just can't figure out what's happening, why your grades just really aren't up to par. And then later that week, they came back to me and said, you know what, I really got to go buy a textbook. Well, I just didn't ask the right questions at the beginning, okay? So sometimes I just have to start at the beginning, right? Make sure you have the textbook, make sure you have a computer, okay, that kind of stuff. Okay, huh? They were using just the online materials. Okay, but I guess they didn't get to the end of chapter questions because they didn't have the textbook, which, you know, I suppose is okay. If you go to the library, it's there for you, but you got to go to the reserve section to check it out for 2 hours at a time. Okay. All right. All right, so we can minimize this. All right, lecture for today. Gee whiz, when did we start? We started at 3, and we go to 4:20, okay. All right, so I got to stop at 4:20, about 20 minutes or so. Okay. All right. So those of you that have a copy of this, that's really nice. Okay, a couple terms that we're interested in are some scientific disciplines, and that is anatomy, and that's the class you signed up for. And anatomy is a scientific study of the structure of the human body. And that's pretty much what we're going to be interested in this class is human body. We might use some cow eyes and pig hearts and stuff like that, but that's because they resemble the human body a lot. All right, so we're mostly interested in the human body. Like, for instance, we want to know the structure of the hand. Like, how many digits does your hand have? Okay, and that's a digit is a finger, so we'll have to learn some information. And what do you got in there? Well, you got a bunch of muscles in there, and you got nerves in there, and bunches of bones and things like that. And so because of the structure of the hand, right, the hand can do some pretty amazing things. right? And if we understand the function of how all the pieces work together, that's what we call physiology. So anatomy is the study of structure, and physiology is the study of how that structure goes about doing its everyday business, all right? So just because you have five digits doesn't mean that you have a marvelous hand like a human being, okay? Like dogs and cats have five digits, but they can't do sign language with them or other kinds of things with your fingers, right? Like sign language. Can't grab things, okay? Because your hand has a special thumb which is opposable, right? So you can grasp things, pencils, right? So you have communication skills because you can do sign language, you can write, right, with your hand that many other kinds of animals just can't perform because they don't have the proper, the same kind of structure. So there's always a relationship between structure and function, and the function pretty much is determined by the structures that are there. All right, so for instance, if you're missing a thumb, okay, what are you missing? Well, you can't really grab things. You can't manipulate, right, with that hand anymore. So we're going to look at structure-function relationships quite a bit in this class. All right, so make sure you know the definition between anatomy and physiology. Well, there are different branches of anatomy, and this first one right here is gross anatomy. And guess what that gross means? It means disgusting. No, it doesn't mean disgusting. Okay, it could mean that. But gross just means what? Big, large, right? So any kind of anatomy that you can see with your naked eye is gross anatomy. Like what? Elbow, wrist, arm, leg, right? That's gross anatomy. That's a branch of anatomy. And then there's a lot of anatomy you can't see with your naked eye. You need special instrumentation to see that, like a microscope, for instance. So we call that microscopic anatomy. That's there in your everyday life, but it's something we don't pay attention to because we don't walk around with microscopes on our eyes. We do that in lab, and that's usually a lot of fun. It's pretty amazing because this can take you to some amazing, faraway, foreign places you've never been to before, and you don't even have to get on an airplane. All you have to do is look through a microscope. Okay. Developmental anatomy is the kind of anatomy that looks at how a body changes through its lifespan. Right, so there's a part of your body that's going to grow through your whole lifespan. What part of your body is that? If you look at your grandma and grandpa, for instance. Yeah, your ears and your nose. They will continue to grow. Okay, even though you're a grown up, they still continue to grow. That would be an example of developmental anatomy. And then embryology is another kind of anatomy, but we study how a fetus develops. So that's from conception to birth is embryology. And things have to grow and change in a person's body before they're born. And then another branch right here is surface anatomy. Surface anatomy is looking at landmarks on the surface of your person and then understanding something about internal structures that are deep to those landmarks. So, for instance, you got this big bony prominence right here on your elbow that we bang all the time, and it hurts, right? It might even shoot electricity up into your arm, right? That's the ulna and the olecranon process on the ulna. So using this as a landmark, I know exactly where that ulna is in there, all right? Another landmark, for instance, there's a little piece of your sternum that's hanging down called xiphoid process. That's another real important landmark because that kind of tells you where your liver and your heart is. Right, and then your cheekbone right here, that's an important feature, right? So underneath that right there, that's your zygomatic bone. Okay, so that's a branch of anatomy. We don't spend too much time with surface anatomy. The kind that we spend the most time with, and I don't have it on the slide right here, is called systematic anatomy. And systematic anatomy is understanding anatomy based on organ systems. So what could be an organ system? An organ system is a group of organs that are operating to produce a certain kind of function. So if I say stomach and small intestine and large intestine, okay, what kind of function is being performed by these different organs? That would be digestion. So that's part of the digestive organ system. All right, and that's usually how we're going to spend most of our time in here. So we're going to look at the skeletal system. And then we're going to look at the muscle system. And then the respiratory system. right? So that's a very nice way to understand anatomy, by a system-level approach. Okay. Another approach to understanding anatomy is by understanding levels of structural and functional organization, the hierarchy. So if we have something really complicated, like the human body, how are you ever going to understand how something as complicated as the human body, how that all function and how it's all put together? And that is, maybe you could think of something else that's fairly complicated, and that is your own personal finances. All right, you got so much money going here and going there. How do you keep track of all that? What's a good way to take something that's complicated and understand something about it? Break it down into smaller pieces, yeah, into its component parts. So for you to understand your finances, you got to know how much money is going to life insurance, how much money is going to mortgage, how much is going to car insurance, how much is going to pay for the car, gasoline, right? And then after you got all your categories lined out, what do? Just add it all up. We call that integration. So you got to know all the little component pieces before you know how the whole thing works together as just a single unit. So in anatomy, where do we start? And as a matter of fact, this works for physiology as well. So if we're going to break things down, okay, into smaller topics, guess what the first topic is going to be? Should it be something big or something small? Okay, I would say something small. Okay, let's make something small, because those are the small pieces that we're going to add together. So the smallest things we can't see, even with a microscope, that would be the chemical level of organization. These are the smallest things that make up our body. So here are a number of important chemicals that we're going to look at, like, what's this one right here?
Water.
Water, H2O, right? So you know, some of you know a little bit of chemistry and chemical symbols. H stands for hydrogen and O, oxygen. And if you put two hydrogens and this oxygen together, that gives you a substance called water, which makes up most of our body. But if I look at all of these over here, probably one of the more important would be this one right here. And that one is ATP. Yeah, ATP, and you're exactly right. That's the energy that your body uses to stay alive, that ATP can use to drive all kinds of unfavorable reactions, like muscle contraction, every time you think a thought, right? Every time, and how your brain helps regulate the rest of your body. It needs ATP or adenosine triphosphate. So if a cell doesn't have adenosine triphosphate, what could you tell me about that cell? It's dead. It's just not going to function. Okay, so ATP is, you could consider that the most important molecule for life, because that's what fuels all of the living processes inside our body. I'll talk some more about that a little bit later. All right, and if we add up a bunch of chemicals, okay, and put them together, we get something a little bit more complicated, and that is an organelle. Organelles have different names depending on what they do. The nucleus protects the genetic material inside our cells, and it also then tells the cell how to function. So it has some really important roles inside the cell. Rough endoplasmic reticulum is important for making proteins. Maybe some of you have heard about proteins before. Does anybody know the building block of a protein? Amino acid? Yeah, amino acid is a building block of a protein. So again, that's just another way of taking something complicated like a protein and breaking it down into its component parts. Physiology is maybe a little bit more important in understanding all the basic chemistry compared to in here. But I think you should know that this chemical level is a building block for organelles. You need chemicals to put them together to make an organelle. And if we take all these organelles and put them together, and a cell membrane is another organelle, what can we make if we put a bunch of organelles together? We get a cell out of it, right? So I want you to know the basic building blocks of a cell are organelles, and the basic building blocks of organelles are chemicals. All right, so a cell is a basic unit of all life. That's a structural and functional unit of life. So if you're wondering whether or not something is alive, you have to see that it's made up of cells. And if it's not made up of cells, then it's not a living system. Okay, it might mimic a living system, maybe it can manipulate a living system, but it's really not alive. And a really good example of this is a virus. Okay, a virus doesn't have any of these organelles right here. So it's really not a living organism. And that really means that viruses are really hard to treat when you have a viral infection. Because if you have a bacterial infection, which is a cell, how can you fight that bacterial infection? You can kill those bacteria, and that cures you of that infection. But if you're infected with a virus, how can you kill something that's not alive? Ah, that's a dilemma, right? And that's why viral infections are really dangerous. And usually you can get over them within 2 weeks, but if your immune system is not strong enough to let you live those 2 weeks, then you'll die of that viral infection, even if it's something simple like a flu virus, okay? Okay, so I want you to know a cell has got all these organelles. It's got cytoplasm, and we're going to get to a cell pretty soon. A cell is a basic building block. I might have to move closer to the computer. Of a tissue. All right, so if we take a number of cells and put them together, and the cells all have the same kind of function, and they all kind of look the same, then it becomes a tissue. And what's nice about tissues is that our whole body is made up of only four different kinds of tissues. And we see epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. You point to some place in your body, I could tell you which one of those four tissues it is. So this is a really handy way to break down something complicated like yourself, right? Because there's only four of these kinds of tissues. All right, and if we put an epithelium together with connective tissue and maybe muscle, right, that's no longer a tissue. That is now an organ, right? So the basic building blocks of an organ are these tissues. So two or more tissues that work together to perform one function. That's an organ. Like, give me an example of an organ. Yeah, your heart, right? Your heart has got, I got to get closer to the computer, it's got muscle, okay? But it also has, what, nervous tissue. My mouse is running out of steam here. Okay, let's see if this is any better right here. All right. So then we can put together the heart with some blood vessels. All right, so now we got a couple organs that are working together to perform a certain function, like transport blood throughout your body. So now what is that? That's an organ system. So a group of organs performing one function, that's an organ system. And then if we put all these organ systems that make your body together, what does that make? That makes an organism. That's any kind of living thing. So what kind of organ systems do you have in the body? I got to go find a picture for you. Okay. What kind of oops. Ah, okay, never mind. Up. Where did I put it? Anatomy. Organ system. Okay. So a good organ system is one that's made up of all the bones in your body. Okay, like your femur, your hip bones. We would call that the skeletal system. Your muscular system is made up of all the skeletal muscles in your body. Does anybody know the name of a skeletal muscle? How about biceps? Biceps brachii. That's one of them. Okay. And cardiovascular. What are the parts of your cardiovascular system? We said your heart and these blood vessels. Okay. But now what about those lungs? What kind of organ system do we place those in? Typically, that would be the respiratory system. Okay. And digestive system. Give me a name of an organ in your digestive system. Yeah, your stomach, small intestine, large intestine. Okay, including your esophagus and your oral cavity right here. That's all part of your digestive system. And when you put all these systems together, that makes up the organism. All right, so organ system is a building block for organism. Now, I might test you on this. I might ask you, I might give you the name of an organ. You got to tell me what organ system it belongs to. Like lungs, what would you say?
Respiratory
system. Okay. I probably won't pick on something as simple as that. You know, like heart. What organ system is the heart?
Cardiovascular.
Again, that's too easy. Okay. But I'll pick something that has some different and new terminology for you. Like your skin, for instance. Perfect example. What organ system does your skin make up? Is it respiratory? Yeah, you guys are good. It's not your respiratory system. You can't breathe through your skin, but that is part of your integument. All right, so integument means that you have been educated in some anatomy already. So I would ask you some of those harder questions, okay? And your integument is made up of your nails and skin and other accessory structures like hair, and there's some glands and a little tiny muscle that when you get cold or anxious contracts, and it gives you what? Gives you little goosebumps, yeah, attached to a hair follicle. Okay, so that would be your integument. So that's pretty much what I want you to know about the integumentary system. All right, so here is just a list of the various kinds of systems. All right, terminology and body plan. A lot of times we're going to, well, the only good way to understand anatomy is by understanding what structures are close to each other. What's the relationship between all the structures in your body? Okay. And so, how would you describe where are your eyes? They're up in your head. They're up in your head, kind of superior in your body. They're also anterior. You don't have any eyes in the back of your head. And then you know where your nose is, and you can then describe the relationship of your eyes to your nose. So that's really how I want you to know anatomy in here, is by relationship to other structures. And so in order to know the relationship or the position of structures relative to each other, the body has to have a standard position, because your body can take all kinds of different positions, and your eyes and nose aren't going to change, okay, but your arms and legs and digits are going to change, so there has to be a standard position. So if I tell you to go from one place to another, you know how to get there. And we call that anatomical position is when somebody is standing erect on their feet, facing forward, with their arms down by their sides, not up like this, okay? And I'm relaxed, and notice how my arms are facing, but this is not anatomical position, even though I'm relaxed, right? I have to move my hands so that the palms of my hands face forward, and my thumbs face outward. This is anatomic position. Right, so it's important to always think of somebody in anatomic position when you tell them to move from one spot to another. Okay, so directional terms. The front of your body is the anterior part. The back part is posterior. All right, anterior also has another name. We call that ventral. Anterior and ventral are the same, and people use those interchangeably. Sometimes it's hard to keep track because they interchange them so fast. Posterior is also dorsal, at least in people. Okay, superior means up toward the head, inferior means down toward your feet. So when we use these terms, we always think of two structures. For instance, how is your nose compared to your belly button? Your nose is what compared?
Superior.
Superior. It doesn't mean it's better or worse or anything like that. It just means what? On top of, right? The belly button is down below. Cranial and caudal pretty much is the same thing as superior and inferior. Cranial is up toward the brain. Caudal literally means down toward your tail. Well, that doesn't work so well for people because we don't have a tail, but it means what? It means inferior in that direction. Medial and lateral is real important, especially for anatomic position, right? So let's look at our digits, our fingers once again. Medial means more toward midline. If you think of some midline in your body, all right, as opposed to something that's far off to the side. So the way we would use that terminology, we would say the little finger is what to the thumb? Yeah, the little finger is closer to midline, so it's medial. The thumb, since it's pointing to the outside, is lateral to the little finger. All right, I wouldn't say superior or inferior in this particular case because it doesn't make sense. I wouldn't say anterior or posterior, but medial and lateral makes what? Perfect sense. So not all of these designations make perfect sense. You have to use them appropriately. The hardest one to appreciate is proximal and distal. Again, think of some center area of your body. Okay, the closer it is to some center location of your body, we call that proximal. If it's far away from some center location in your body, we say it's farther away or distal. This makes perfect sense, right, when you go from shoulder to elbow to wrist, right, because in order to get to the elbow from some center part of your body, you got to go through the shoulder to get to the elbow. And to get to the wrist, you got to go from some center location in your body through the elbow to get to the wrist. So the wrist is farther away than your elbow. So we say the wrist is distal compared to the elbow. or the shoulder is, compared to the elbow right here, the shoulder is proximal, it's closer, right? And we use that all the time because sometimes we want to feel somebody's pulse, count their heart rate, and we use an artery down here by your thumb, okay? That's far away from your heart. Would you call that a central pulse, a proximal pulse, or a distal pulse? It's because it's far away from your heart. Yeah, it's a distal pulse. Okay. Superficial and deep refers to something that's right on the surface of an organ or the surface of your body. Deep just means it's down in the interior someplace. And all organs have different layers, different components to it. So we would use this, for instance, how would you talk about the heart compared to the integument? The heart is what compared to the integument? The heart is, yeah, it's deep. It's just underneath the integument. The integument is superficial. Or the most superficial organ in your body, organ system, is the integument, right? So that's how we would use those terms. Okay. So in lab, we're going to continue talking about some of these things right here. So I'll try to finish up. And start mousing around in Blackboard, finding your way around. And I'll see you Wednesday 3 in Anatomy Lab 335. And if you want to get started with that pre-lecture reading assignment, fantastic. The study plan, fantastic. And the study guide, even better yet. Start practice labeling those figures.